continue your duty.
Counting of the body.
Let's go. Continue. For the body.
Thanks.
That is basically a commentary, if I've got something to say on it, Rowan, good, thank you. I want to talk about very basically, briefly, on contract work. Well, I'm not quite sure exactly to what extent you engage in contract work, but I once had a response from an organization in Australia, and I've mentioned this before, that securing the mine dumps in what used to be my constituency area in Dobsonville Meadowlands, that was secured with a chemical that was carcinogenic. And nobody ever wanted to admit this, but the people in Australia were adamant about it and said I should get that information. I don't know, you see, whether I believe that CSIR is involved in stabilizing that mine. But anyhow, you don't have to go into that because it's a long, it's an old story already. The problem might have been solved by now. But I was going to say there are things like that which go wrong. I mean, the point is that there were lots of people in Netherlands, Dobsonville, who got problems. Best way, easiest way to put it, from that mine. I wanted to say something that I have said many a time, that maybe the CSR is growing too big. It's not, I don't think it's necessarily that employees would feel that way, and I might be totally wrong, you see, but I just picture the situation when I was a student, probably my second, third year, and they said, oh, you must go work for the CSIR. Not that the CSIR asked me, I was just a student. But they had two little buildings on the Wits campus. And really, we've grown to a massive size today. And one wonders really if the net is spread too wide. I don't know. I just want to ask you whether you think it's time that you need to split off some of these structures that you are talking about into separate. I'm not suggesting you should. I just want to know what you say about it. Some of it is just comments from my side. You don't necessarily have to answer all of them. You know, I had a big fallout with, that is during Mandrovi's time when she was chair of the Science and Technology, with one of the DGs who said to me when I asked him, tell me amongst all these things that you've told us, what is basic or fundamental research? He says, everything we do is basic and fundamental. Well, I know he's talking utter rubbish, sorry to say it now, and I'll say it to his face to him, but I don't have to say it to you. So I was very pleased when I saw your diagram on slide 4. Not to pretend that everything is basic, because I believe it can't be. I'm just saying I like the diagram. You see, what I was getting at, not that I feel that the CSIR need to be split up, and maybe the people CSIR won't like me at all, but I'm just really asking what's your view, if it is not perhaps becoming very big, you see, and I'm just looking time-wise what has happened to it. Just a final comment, and you don't have to answer all these things, is that I've had great difficulty. It's a very nice report. I gave up when I looked at the financial things because I had difficulty when I go from one size print to another size print that I cannot read the small size print. That may be, it's not just the financial, it's every time you explain some diagrams, you go to small size print, and I know why, but it makes it very difficult.
I just want to understand the rationale behind the comment that you made.
But I want to know from the department,
if they say controlling flights have a special regulation in reserves, it's important to protect the area. I want to know how is a plane flying over a protected area or a national park at 38,000 feet or 28,000 feet going to affect the park? I cannot understand what negative effect the flying of a plane over a protected area or over a national park for that matter at the height of 38,000 feet is going to have on the park. If they can just explain to you that to me so that I can understand that. Then the question around clause 6, that the SANPARK must make set penalties for and enforce traffic rules. Now, I've been to a couple of their national parks. The one is the Kruger National Park, where they have got traffic enforcement officials there. They're enforcing traffic rules also in Kalahari. What is now the difference here? Because each park has got rules, and the public sign these things as they go into the park, that they will keep to the speed limit and they will not drive in certain areas. So I just also cannot see why have they done this previously illegally. All those people that have been fined for exceeding the speed limit, and why was that illegal? Can they just explain that to me?
Chair, I've just got one. Chair, on clause 4, section 47. The controlling of flights, and I want to agree with the Honourable Van Rooyen, but Chair, what happened if there's a rescue flight, for argument's sake, over these protected areas, and something happened, because I see here that prior written permission of the management authority must first be obtained before flying over the aforementioned areas. Now, if there's a rescue taking place and the rescue flight must fly over this protected area, so it will be prohibited from flying over there because it's the Afrikaans only ingegeven. What is ingegeven? or decision has to be taken. The only way to get this person to the hospital very quickly is fly over this protected area. So I think, not to be too rigid on this, if the department can just have a little bit of slack on this one. Also, I mean, the Department of Transport indeed must come to some sort of an arrangement beforehand to say that, listen, in terms of civil aviation, commercial flights can only go through the outside team flights, that type of thing. They need to specify, but not to say controlling flights. So that means controlling all flights. And that is unacceptable. They need to specify which type of flights, which type of aircraft. I know some of the aircraft can mess. Some of them emission gas are not up to standard. And as we are going towards a green world and all that. But I think that they need to go and sit down, deep and dot, to sit down and work out the specifics in terms of controlling their flights, in terms of the aviation and all that. Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much. Well, those questions for now, also in my mind, ask myself how are they controlling out here? How are they going to set the boundaries right in the air, up there, so that they must go the other side and go the other side, not to go here? How are they going to do that, you know? And as members rightfully raised it, if you come concretely, what are the reasons? What are you saying? What will be the impact? What disturbance is there? If we can hear that you have concrete issues to raise, why you went to that extent, you know, But obviously we will also hear the argument from the side for the Department of Transport, because it seems as if you are unable to reach agreement while I do not understand. But let Honorable Watson wants to come in.
Okay, I just wonder what this matter of the controlled air space was that discussed at the portfolio committee? That's where it should be sorted out. Now the department come and have a bun fight in ultimate.
Obviously they will tell us whether or what is taken up with the portfolio committee. Otherwise, what went wrong, that at this late stage that this is happening, the way it is happening, it really frustrates, as if we really operate in silos, in isolation to one another, while we are one government. It shouldn't be the case in certain days. Let's listen to you how you defended this matter before.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Lansford?
Chairperson, as my sense, it would be interesting to get what happens in the portfolio committee. But for me, first of all, not fair for departments to come and start making their arguments here in Parliament, where when the legislation comes from the cabinet committee.
Yeah.
It's wrong. It should not happen like that. So we're not speaking about the department from Namibia, the other one. There are departments within one cabinet of the United States in South Africa. What my view is that let them go together with any other affected department, meet and come with an agreement to this committee. Because now it will not be fair for this alone to put his argument, the other department is not here. Even if the other department was here, the NCOP should not be used as an appeal court for their own things. They couldn't agree on and so on. As much as we can get the information which Mr. Watson is asking, but I don't want to have a situation where only one department is putting his argument here. So let them go back and meet and come and find him there as well.
The department can come in.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, in terms of the Honourable's comment in relation to the two-thirds of the House, that was an instruction from the Portfolio Committee. From the Department's perspective, we've also had a bit of difficulty in terms of how it's actually going to apply in practice. Our point of view is that if we're saying that it can only be dissolved in terms of an Act of Parliament, that would be sufficient safeguard in that regard. So, in terms of the Portfolio Committee instruction that we've included that, but we would agree with the member's comment in that regard that I think if we are to dissolve it in terms of an Act of Parliament, that would be sufficient. Then, Chairperson, in terms of the urgency, these amendments, and my colleagues will probably be able to comment more comprehensively on these and on some of the issues that I'm going to be addressing as well. But as indicated at the beginning of the presentation, this was part of the E66 bill, and some of those amendments are imperative in terms of urgency. In order to increase our enforcement functions and so forth. So and that's the rationale for this bill, basically. Also, we need to, as I said in my presentation, increase the scope of and functions of sand parks in order to allow them to properly manage our national parks. Chairperson, in terms of controlling flights, and how they affect parks. I'm going to ask my colleague on my left, Kukawan, who's the specialist and has also been involved in the negotiations around the flight corridors, to address some of the issues that
I might miss. Chairperson, this is an amendment bill. In terms of the Act as it currently stands, Section 47 is an existing provision in the Act. And I think maybe it might be useful for the members if I just read the section, so it gives a bit of background, excuse me, into what we're proposing to do in terms of an amendment. The current Section 47 states the use of aircraft in special nature reserves, national parks, or World Heritage Sites. Subsection 1 says a special nature reserve, national park, or World Heritage Site includes the airspace above the reserve park or site to a level of 2,500 feet above the highest point of the reserve park or site. Subsection 2 says that no person may land or take off in an aircraft in a special nature reserve, national park, or World Heritage Site except A, on or from a landing field designated by the management authority of that special nature reserve, national park, or World Heritage Site, and B, with the permission of and on conditions determined by the management authority. Subsection 3 says no person may fly over a special nature reserve, national park, or World Heritage Site at a level of less than 2,500 feet above its highest point, except as may be necessary for the purposes of subsection 2. And then I think this will address Honorable Adams' query in this regard. Subsection 4 says, subsection 2 and 3 do not apply in an emergency or to a person that's acting on the instructions of the management authority. And then subsection 5 says the minister acting with the concurrence of the cabinet member responsible for civil aviation may prescribe further reasonable restrictions on flying over protected areas. So, Chairperson, as you can see, these are existing provisions in the Act. And I think in terms of what we're proposing is to actually introduce a measure of flexibility into that clause. In terms of why it's necessary not to have been flying over or landing in national parks here, person, I think just in terms of practicality, planes flying into and out of a national park, obviously disturb animals, got the drone of the plane, the noise effect, the pollution effect, if there's a crash, also in terms of fires, that kind of thing. And I'm sure Mr. Cowan will be able to give us a bit more in terms of the rationale behind it, and also what sort of interaction there has been with the Civil Aviation Authority in this regard. Chairperson, this issue wasn't raised in the portfolio committee specifically, and I think that's why it wasn't dealt with there. But the honourable member behind me also indicated that there was a cabinet process, and basically these things were presented to cabinet and so forth. As I said, Mr. Cowan will probably be able to indicate better what the degree of interaction with our other sister departments was. So I'll ask Mr. Cowan to just expand on the issues that I've touched on in relation to specifically Section 47.
Thank you. I think provided just about credit the book. I think I'd like to point out that the area that we're talking about that's under the control of the Minister of Environment Affairs in general is roughly 3% of the surface area of the country. And the biggest areas that we have are on our borders, like the Kruger National Park or the Kalahari Central National Park. So anyone that's flying over them would obviously be going cross border, so I would imagine they'd have to be going to some sort of control point, which probably isn't directly in line with those areas anyway. There is research that supports the figures that we've just been given off that actually the 2,500 feet above the highest point, in the fact that if there is a recognized level of disturbance to the behavior of and particularly as the servants of the breeding animals and birds. And this has ended up or resulted in similar restrictions being enforced in the Antarctic and parts of North America. So there is a precedent for this. The thing that I always come back to is the disturbance of the visitor experience as well. You have multiple planes flying over continually, like you have that Victoria Falls or in the Okavango Swamps at peak period. It really does affect all your sense of place. So, we do get continual complaints by people that are going to these particular areas where they wanting to get away from it all and they get planes flying over them. So to me it's quite a large argument for that. And then you may recall in the development of this act in 2003, the flying height that was proposed was 1,500 feet above the highest point. And that is the thing that we had negotiated with the Civil Aviation and Department of Transport at that time. And it was this particular committee and the European at the time actually raised that height from 1,500 feet to 2,500 feet. Which we were pleased about from the department point of view, and I think this is where the difference of opinion has come in people at Civil Aviation. How do we control that area is quite a difficult question to answer. We have quite recently had a meeting with people from Civil Aviation and Department of Transport about various control methods from the land, and certainly we will be looking at possible changes to that flight height, just depending on the technology that is available. We also had admit very recently the borders of all our national parks to the Department of Transport for inclusion in their map system to be able to inform them where these particular areas are. Thank you.
None of the responsible members have any follow-up questions.
Mr. Chair, I'm a member of the public, and I know this hearing is not really open to the public. I did submit a document. I've submitted various documents, some to the Minister of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, and I've submitted representations to both the ANC and the DA on the specific issue. And I'm a bit concerned that none of the documentation has actually got before this committee. I've also submitted a submission on behalf of the Commercial Aviation Association, specifically related to Section 47, the amendment that is before this committee today, as well as the legislation that was promulgated in 2003. Due to the fact that the department isn't here, would this committee grant me the opportunity maybe just to deal with some of the legislative issues that we feel are going awry here?
Jefferson, I don't think they responded to my question about the fines in the and how were they dealing with the fines before.
Yeah, maybe responding to what you have raised, at this level we cannot entertain submissions from the side of the public. According to rules and procedures within the NCOP, This is a section 25 deal. You deal with it here, and it goes. It's not a section 76. He sees what a section 76, obviously. When we deal with negotiating mandate, etc., you could still have space within provinces to do your submissions, because when we do public hearings, we do our public hearings via the provinces, but not at this level as a committee. And that's why even if your document might have been submitted to us, probably it might be very difficult really at this stage to let it be discussed here. Honorable Watson?
Chair, what prohibits this committee to have public hearings on Section 75, as you just said? In what way are we prohibited to do so? Because if I read the Constitution, we have a duty to have public hearings. If we feel that not sufficient public hearings have been held in the NA, I stand corrected, but to my mind, we have the right to do that.
Mm-hmm. Without much ado, I would request you to come in with your input. The committee is ready to listen to you. Are there still outstanding questions? Let the Department of Deed respond to the question outstanding, then you will come in.
My apologies, Mr. Chairman. There's a question of traffic offenses. When we took regulations regarding what we had to enable the sandbox to run or have traffic rules or control traffic in terms of regulations in terms of the Act, St. George advised at the time advised us that was after virus because it had been left out in the body of the Act itself. I believe that the fines that have been done in terms of park rules are probably equally outrageous at the moment. And this is why we believe it's important to set that section on the ability to make traffic rules. It was part of the old National Parks Act, and for some reason it slipped through the cracks, and we didn't include it
Chairman, members. In a nutshell, and I know that the committee somewhere used tremendous pressure to get these documents out, just want to give a short background of where we are and what we request the committee to consider. As you are aware, this bill, specifically Section 47, deals with issues related to airspace matters. And just to quickly brief the committee, from the Department of Transport side, we are basically, through the Minister of Transport, a party to the Chicago Convention of 1944. So in terms of the Chicago Convention of 1944, South Africa is a contracting state, and that specific convention has been enacted into South Africa's law through the Aviation Act. This act empowers the minister to do certain things, including the designation of airspace in the interest of aviation safety. Specific reference we have in the Act is Section 22.1L, which specifically deals with the delimitation, the designation, or restriction of airspace. In regard to that aspect, also we have a national need for central airspace planning that is done through the National Airspace Master Plan, as compiled by a statutory body called the National Airspace Committee. We have also gone recently through certain international checks. Aviation by its nature is international, and therefore we have the specific organizations called International Civil Aviation Organization, ICAO, as well as an oversight from the Federal Aviation Authority dealing with certain aspects relating to aviation safety. This basically is a test to see whether South Africa's legislative framework, as well as its implementation thereof, would actually fit the international standards so that South Africa is then categorized accordingly. In the most recent audit that we have received, a major flaw was detected in terms of the South African legislation dealing with aviation, in as much that it's actually consisting of different parts of legislation that in certain cases do not necessarily talk to each other. In other words, there could have been some gaps and some overlaps. This is now being rectified through the Civil Aviation Bill, which is currently before the Portfolio Committee, which has also reached a very final, rather final stages of adoption. The difficulty that we currently foresee with regards to the proposed NEMA Bill is that we will again have a situation of not having all the aviation-related safety issues under one legislation, and actually under the authority of one body, in this case the Minister of Transport. So for us it is a critical issue to make sure that we retain our aviation safety rating, and this is why we have we are approaching the committee at this stage to consider some amendments that we would like to propose to the amendment bill. There are certain implications should we not be successful in respect of our request, and I we'll probably elaborate on that in more detail if it is required from the committee. But it would impact on South African carriers, its ability to fly into certain places, especially the US and the EU. There could also be a problem with tourism into South Africa because of perceived unsafe skies, because of the safety ratings. There could also be an impact on the World Cup 2010 hosting in respect of that, if that is indeed the case, in respect of the legislation not meeting the requirements of the international organizations. As part of that, also I may mention that whilst the proposal from Environmental Protection Tourism would be a good one, the Department of Transport, of course, is very sympathetic to their need for protecting wildlife from disturbances of low-flying aircraft. So we are not against the principle as such. All we are asking is that we are looking at the proper structure through which these requirements and issues should be channeled. And the ideal position would be to actually channel it through the National Airspace Committee, so it becomes part of the National Airspace Master Plan, and of course that will then be coordinated within the bigger national plan in terms of the Chicago Convention framework, which would then meet international standards of that. We are basically working also on a similar approach with regards to the astronomy bill, specifically with regard to the square kilometer array setup. So this is not something that we are basically doing for the first time, but I think we have seen quite a lot of results that actually encourages us that this kind of cooperation between states or departments, we can still find a very useful solution to this issue. So we would recommend that we go basically in that direction. Mr. Chairman, then with regards to the proposal that was handed out to the honourable members, you will note that we are not suggesting major changes to the document in the sense of replacing or taking everything out. But what we are basically asking for is that there is consultation with the civil aviation or then the minister's area of jurisdiction. We have some questions about the extent of the amendment to also include all organ of state as well. We are not sure exactly what wants to be achieved through that. We recommend that the height above the nature reserve should be declared, or rather should be done through the civil aviation regulations of 1997 as amended. And then if you look at 3A, that instead of five corridors being determined by environmental affairs and tourism, that it should be done through the Minister of Transport and agreed, so that that part is then coordinated as part of the National Airspace Master Plan. And Mr. Chairman, I think that in a nutshell is what we would like to present to the committee. I've been very brief. If there's any questions or any area of clarification, then you are most welcome to elaborate. Thank you.
How will we have the half member Dr. Kelly from the side of the Department of Transport. Honorable Watson, Honorable Van Rooyen.
Okay, what we didn't hear is why the department couldn't solve this before coming to us. Whether the ministers, in fact, had been contacted to negotiate a cabinet list instead of us having two departments sparring in the ring and with the observers and the referees. I really find this very, very disconcerting. It's not the first time. We've had another bowl where there are three departments having bun fights in our committee. This I really think reflects very badly on the situation between the departments. I'd like to find out why. Why is it come brought to us here?
Thank you, Chairperson. I also agree with Honourable Watson. Why are these things always coming out at this late stage? That's exactly why, the reason why I asked my first question. What is the hurry, the urgency of this whole bill? Why is this thing being pushed through? If there are still outstanding issues that's exactly why I asked that first question of what is this urgency? Why can't they wait and solve their problems before they come to us? But if I can just come back to the presentation made by the Department of Transport, I think they are raising very valid issues here. Chairperson, you will recall the last couple of months, four months, we had some serious aviation accidents in South Africa. That is affecting our safety rating internationally. So the issues raised by the departments are really bad. So and we must take that seriously. But they should resolve this on another level, not here in this this committee. So I don't know what are we going to do with that?
Thank you, Chair. I thought the Chair will brief the Department of Transport or what about this. That they go back and sit with this and agree. You can't reach it. Earlier on, before you came in here, I was saying you can't behave like this with one department from Namibia and the other one from another country. We are part of one constitutional unitary state and we should behave as such with a common vision of where you want to take this country to. This is coming with an environmental perspective to the whole issue. You are coming with a aviation one and so on, and like, you should find a compromise. But if you cannot come back to us, then we said the deed of covenant business, that you can't agree. Then we'll have to make you agree if you cannot agree. But I don't believe that you can say you should agree. So that you come with something as one package in this meeting. Because really we cannot afford this kind of situation. A piece of legislation, any piece of legislation, comes from one cabinet. There's one approval. We can ask questions why you couldn't agree by then and so on. So there are two reasons, depends on the amendment. But go and meet, find some space in the calendar, come back to one meeting. We should be balanced within your international frameworks and national frameworks and so on. So the committee will welcome that. And also take what Mr. Adams raised about this rescue machines and so on. Because it's also important point to raise. You can't await within authority before you go and rescue a person within or fly over.
Only I see, I hear the member saying this is not a ground to resolve a matter of this kind. Two departments from the same government and from the same cabinet. But you come to us, your deliberations are saying to us you never met. If you never met, maybe you avoided meeting because you already have different views. And if you have in different views, it is not for us as a committee to come up with one viewpoint against the other view. You must agree before you come to us because you are both departments of this government. And therefore, there's no reason whatsoever that the ministers cannot agree and you cannot agree as departments. The committee has listened and has come up with their viewpoint, with their questions. And really they understand that there will be complications and problems, the way they are raising the questions. You know, and therefore we hope you are matured enough as department really to have this matter resolved. This is not the place where we can do something for you now. We'd love to hear you. Next time, come and say we've agreed on this issue. Good for you. For
Amen. If I may, Chairman, just a practical arrangement. In my discussions with the Department of Transport has never approached the Department on this issue. This bill has been for a long time within the parliamentary domain. The NA was never approached by the Department of Transport around their concerns. But my concern is separate and it is very practical. Next week will be the last plenary of Parliament. We are unsure what will happen next year. If this bill is not approved...
Honourable Zulan.
No, please ask us what we have made the room, which is the view of all this committee. So we're taking it over the week.
No, I'm not against the room.
Definitely. Who's proposing? So that we have the second. Honourable Renful proposed that we give it back to the department when we resolve it. Honourable Van Rooyen is supporting that. I think this matter is resolved now with that agreement. I don't think, Mr. Durand, if you argue,
no,
you turn around the decision taken by this committee. You argue, we have listened to your argument already, but you'll never change. We say in this department cannot come before us the way they are now. They must go back and resolve the matter and come back to us.
Sure.
That's what this committee is saying. Nobody can convince us otherwise.
Taking chance of this department.
I agree with what's been said today, and the resolution. But what I would
implore the committee members to consider is that this is not the only provision in the bill. So if it means that I have to take out that section so the rest of it goes through, I would rather ask the committee to then make a ruling in terms of that. I leave out the, as I said, Chairperson, in my opening statement, the section is already in the Act. There is a provision in terms of subsection 5 that says the minister acting with the concurrence of the cabinet member responsible for civil aviation.
That's all that you put him in.
Chairperson, we didn't say to any of these two departments they must go and remove a certain section. We are saying they must go back and come with a consolidated information. We didn't say what he now is trying to say. Can you give the department a ruling, and they must respect that ruling of this
committee? Sure. Definitely, yes. I think it has been consolidated. Just in terms of the other provisions, as I indicated when I made my presentation, this is one aspect of the entire bill. There are other aspects that relate to, for example, increasing the scope of Sand Park's functions in terms of what they're doing on a day-to-day basis.
But still, you don't understand the language that people are talking?
Honorable Lenson. Mr. President, the Commissioner. See, earlier on we were asking about this other clause of the 2 of the law. And we're told that they were instructed by the portfolio committee. The decision of this committee is just equal like that instruction they got there. We're for 10 powers or one equal house of parliament. And we don't have a situation where an impression is given by one department of one non-willingness to respect decision of this committee, because that's projected the way I take it. And secondly, the explanation which is given is that one of non-willingness to work with another department in one government. Because we did question before why these things were not attended before in the other processes and so on. We have not got any convincing response to that. But we are saying even if just this base left, why very open committee which is sensitive to the issues which the Department of Transport is raising. And we're saying, let them cooperate together and meet and find each other halfway and so on, so that we have a balanced kind of a piece of legislation, which will not only be suited to DOT or either be suited to environmental affairs, while not conforming to certain norms and standards with regard to aviation. And I think vice versa, whatever things DOT comes with should not kind of the root, the nonsense standards in terms of injury. That's what we're saying, simply so. And we have not have any defiant kind of conduct and behavior yet. You have made a ruling as a chairperson and see why having a certain conduct we wish to meet. He says they are not prepared to take that ruling. And if that's the case, I don't think it's something that is necessary.
I hope they understand, and that's why I was thinking the old endeavoring to talk English, which everybody will be able to understand. And that is the ruling. We are not happy. We hope this is the last that department comes to us in this section, where you are saying you are not working together, you are working in silos, in isolation, where we are a unitary state, where you have to consult. It seems that there were no public hearings whatsoever. I was trying to look in the memoranda where it showed whether there were public hearings. I see none, And that's why we are appealing to the department, and this committee is taking the decision that this should not happen in the future again. If it happens, know that it will go back to you again. No matter how you say, how urgent that particular piece of legislation is. And therefore, this is the ruling that we are requesting the department to take the matter further. You know, if the further public hearings do so, I don't know whether, but that's the ruling for now. We cannot accept it, let's say, before.
Thank you.
and this meeting stand again on the beach.
Thank you very much.
We now going to the negotiating Monday. Yeah, we receive 7 negotiating Mondays, then we'll be able to deal
with them. But they can revive it. The new parliament can revive it. It will be revived from this committee. It will be revived when after election. It will be revived. They don't have to start afresh. In the new parliament. There was a session that we revived when the new parliament came in. Of the park and protection area. and managed by the department. Two, the fund or the trust must be established to compensate any individual who suffered loss or damage which cannot be apportioned due to the negligent behavior of any management authority as provided for in subsection 2. The state must be responsible for the assessment of the claim and compensation payable out of the fund or trust. The second 3.2.
Let's hold it there before we go further. Are these amendments or are they comments? I would love to hear from the. Okay, I want to hear from the committee. Are they formulated as amendment, or somebody must still formulate to be amendment? I want to be clear on that. Honorable Watson.
I think it's difficult to do this the way you're saying now. What we did in the past, we went through the proposed amendment of the, and then the department gave us a comment. And on those comments, based on those comments, we negotiate and reject or accept the amendment. I'm not yet to, you know, we've had so much legislation. We now say Section 49. I don't even know what Section 49 is. We need some input back from the department on the suggestion.
Well, I'm saying this because provinces are operating differently. You have provinces who really formulate amendments, which we have to look into, agree or disagree. But there are provinces that come with comments. Somebody must formulate the amendments for them. They give an idea. You know, I don't know, we, Honorable Zentura?
Yeah, the person has written here, he says the following amendment must be effected in Section 49. Then I think we need to accept that question. According to the province, this amendment is upon our deliberation whether we take them or not. As Mr. Watson is saying, the department can also be given an opportunity to listen to that. So, but the point I wanted to write on Jefferson, it's a kind of a procedural and also a process issue. Because the province only has the briefing on the 6th of November when we're in legislature. There is no indication of where the public hearings were held. We wish we might like to pronounce ourselves here. Because you remember at some one point there were problems about the provinces who had not taken public hearing for the legislation of the there was a court decision around those issues. But we would tend to advise our party in terms of the
I cannot say that they did have their public hearing just because they've been postponing this briefing. And then when we were there, they wanted the briefing to be done and they asked the department on the 6th, but the department didn't pitch up, and then on the 6th, they did. So I cannot say that they did take a public hearing, but that thing is upon the Eastern Cape people that they will maybe challenge what you are saying. But what I'm having is a true reflection of what the committee has done.
Okay, move on, Honourable Member.
Yeah. 3.2, the following amendments must be affected to Section 31 of the bill. The bill is inconsistent with the principles established in the NEMA bill with specific reference to section 24, which relates to debt approval on mineral prospecting by DME. All departments that undertake activities affecting the environment must seek the approval of the debt. That must be responsible for conduction of research impact assessment studies and monitor the implementation thereof. The following amendment must be considered in relation to section 38. That in collaboration with DTI must monitor and register patents on behalf of communities related to indigenous knowledge and traditional medicine and remedies. Income from royalties must be managed by a trust fund established by the state. Should there be no entity representing the community, a research permit must be obtained for the commercialization and research of any traditional medicine and remedies. Therefore, the committee resolved to support the bill with amendments as suggested above.
You know, the compilation, they support the bill if the amendment above are being accepted. If they are not accepted, then it is a struggle because we negotiate. So I don't know what is the committee having to say on this one. Because
no. I don't understand your problem. This is normal. It's normal that negotiating states, that provinces submit their negotiating mandate subject to certain provisions. If we as a committee, after hearing comments from the department, accept these, then they should be written in legal terms and sent to the provinces for final mandate. There's no other way of doing it. It's a negotiating mandate.
Okay, it's a negotiating mandate. We're negotiating now on the Eastern Cape Provincial Legislature. Can we hear the department or they have to say on the proposal?
Chair, just in terms of the process, and Chair, you recall when we had our last meeting, I indicated that the department will make itself available for any meeting. In fact, on the 5th, we were there, and were advised that the members were out to their constituencies, and it was recommended that we come back the next day, which was the 6th, which was done at 9 o'clock. Chairperson, in terms of the proposals made, I think just in terms of section 3.1, the suggestion made there is quite a major amendment to the Act. My initial reading of it, Chairperson, and the committee will appreciate that we've only had time to some of these things for the first time now, is that we're looking at a situation similar to the Road Accident Fund, or that's what my reading is. I might be wrong in my interpretation, but if that is the case, Chairperson, then it's a major, major amendment, and we have to think very carefully about whether and how we're going to incorporate it, if indeed we can. Chairperson, I'm going to ask my colleague to address the Section 31 aspect of it, as well as the Section 38 provision in relation to what the province is suggesting. Honourable Land.
I wanted to check if these are major amendments. Are they relevant to the bill, or they are just major? If we can't put them, won't have problem, or the fact remains that you are saying they are major, are they relevant to the bill? So I wanted to get that clarification.
Chair,
Chair, maybe if I explain that in any event there's a remedy available for somebody who's suffered a loss or an injury, irrespective of whether it's written into the legislation or not. If somebody is responsible for causing harm to another person or a patrimonial loss to that person, there's a normal civil remedy that can be used. So, for example, what's suggested here is that, and I mean, even though the provision as it's crafted is not clear in terms of who actually must fund this thing. So, Chairperson, our submission in relation to that particular amendment is that it's not necessary, because you'd be covered in terms of your civil law rights, in terms of liabilities and patrimonial loss. If I go into the detail of this particular proposed amendment, it says the establishment of a compensation fund or a trust fund, which must be funded by the management of the parks and protection areas. So, Chairperson, just in terms of the way it's phrased as well, I don't think it's clear exactly what the province wants in terms of that, because they're saying it must be funded by the management of the park. All I'm saying in relation to this, Chairperson, is that even if this provision is not there, there would still be a possibility that a person that has been harmed or has suffered a patrimonial loss could actually reclaim that loss from the authority concerned. Thank you. Another question.
Can I not suggest, or let me suggest, propose that we follow the procedure that we've had on a number of occasions in the past. See, this is a very intricate bill, because it deals with a variety of laws. And could I just finish it? I thought you might be listening to what I'm saying, but you seem to be busy with something else. Have I got your protection?
No, you are protected.
Thank you. What I'm saying is that this bill deals with a number of things, and it really is quite involved. That's why we had the department assist also with the briefing. Now, if I look at the negotiating manner, there are the three from Eastern Cape are just start. There are others also coming up with quite involved things. I mean, just for the start, looking at the one proposed under 3.1, deals with compensation, whereas 49 actually deals with licensing. So I think we must go through the mandate, present them by province, and then ask the department to give us a written response so that we can then negotiate in terms of those responses. If it means a delay, Chair, I don't know why we are pressurized when everything has been forced onto us like a sausage machine. I really don't think we can attend to these proposals subjectively if we don't get some written responses from the department. It's no good getting into a conversation here. I propose that we go through all the bills, listen to them, and then ask a written response from the department so that we can study that and come back and negotiate on a level where we all understand what it's about.
I think... Sometimes it's really unfair to for the department to have the negotiating mandate here with us, and we expect them to respond to them. It's not possible. Your proposal, I think, carries water. It's if we listen to all the negotiating mandates today and next week Tuesday, then we deal with the refined matter that the department has taken up.
Okay.
Then we can formulate negotiating. We can send the package back to the province,
agreed,
refined like that. That's what you are proposing,
and
I concur unless the other member thinks otherwise. Honourable member.
Yeah, I cannot
think
otherwise. That as majority here, as we negotiate the
I didn't get that very clear.
No.
2.4 at the back,
in that
page.
Yeah.
It says the committee is not that support the bill with amendment as suggested above. And the others from Hugo and Duane, he talked about the mask. That you also have other provinces that are going to say something in as far as the negotiation is concerned. So we say we must do something else. But we suggest this is making people negotiate and we should only be.
You're protected on the line.
Okay, thank you. That's my little input.
Okay.
About the weekend planning.
Yeah, definitely. I think we agree, unless there's a dissenting view on the proposal of Honorable Watson, that we go through them all. At the end of them, there could be comments, whatever. But then the department goes back and refines them. And next week, Tuesday, then we concretize the negotiated mandate. The package then goes through to the provinces. Do we agree on that?
Agreed.
Thank you very much.
Moi.
Let's move then. Let's listen to the free state.
Absolutely.
The person, consideration for Portfolio Committee considers the full input and information received the Portfolio Committee notice and input by the general public and noticed that. Just before that, the person, the committee did have public hearings in the Free State. One, the department should ensure that mines that are closing down should use the retention money to rehabilitate the land and the dams in order to protect people from inhaling sand from dry dams that have been affected by toxic deposits through mining operations. And this is very relevant in the Free State, especially in the Welkom Goldfields area. The department, in consultation with the Department of Agriculture, must ensure that livestock kept in towns and locations is really relocated to communal kraal as a matter of extreme urgency because they pose an environmental hazard. Three, and of course, five, the minister may establish fora or advisory committee. The committee proposed that there must be an express provision regarding the nature of fora and committees.
Composition.
The number of members and the period of the appointment. Sorry about that. Four, clause 30, the bill makes failure to report emergency incidents a criminal offense. Clause 21 gives protection to the persons who must disclose information on the environment. The committee proposed that these people should be accorded the same status as whistleblowers as individuals in the criminal justice context. Five, clause 17 and 18, the environment management inspector is only required to carry an investigation card and the requirement of carrying a letter as the designation has been removed. The committee strongly feels that this creates a practical enforcement problem so that people may generate identity cards and pose as environmental management inspectors and possibly commit acts of criminality. It is proposed that the inspector should also have visible identification, either to speak on the apparel or marking and the signage of their vehicles. The last one, clause 19, persuading to see above. The committee strongly feels that allowing inspectors to search and seize without warrant very intimately dispensed with effective powers may pose a serious legal and constitutional problem. They are effectively giving power similar to the steps that envision the Criminal Procedure Act. It is proposed that the warrant should still be a requirement and they should only serve without it in circumstances similar to provisions of the Criminal Procedure Act and must be expressed in the bill. The resolution the committee resolved that the authority be conferred on the Free State delegation to vote for the adoption of the bill with aforementioned inputs and consideration.
That was the Free State. The department had it. You got it. The next one is the voting, am I right? We have housing. Housing is around here.
Absolutely.
Okay, housing is there.
Oh, there she is.
Housing can talk to.
The portfolio committee support is no proposed amendment. There was no type of relation and was in portfolio committee support the principal and details of the bill.
That is okay.
Yes.
Which means they support the deal as negotiated.
Yes.
Thank you very much. That was outing. And in the order I have here, I have case then.
The committee agreed to release the original council of the National Federal Authority to support the bill provided that the above comments and proposed amendments are considered facilitated in the bill. The proposed amendment starts from page 2. On clause 1, it says there is an inconsistency in relation to the penalties when one compares this clause with other clauses dealing with a penalty. In clause 3, the amendment of the Minister of Water Affairs and Forestry deals with the functions assigned to the Department of Environmental Agriculture and Tourism. This error must be corrected by substituting the ministry concerned. And clause 12A must also provide for recovery of costs or on post rehabilitation. For the removal of the requirements for court matter to director of public prosecutions must be provided for in the regulation. A 5 amend clause 26, which amends section 49A as follows. That the management authority must implement the provisions of subsection 2 in a manner which takes into account the threat posed by such perceived animals to the human life, spread of animal diseases or other veterinary harm. Section 5, any person who becomes aware of a dangerous animal escaping from a protected area must immediately report this to the authority of the area concerned. A number 6, amendment 29, that substitutes section 89.2. The fines are too steep and need to be reduced. Amendment 31, that amends section 11, to read as follows. Must monitor and report regularly to the Minister on Environmental Impact of all categories of genetically modified organisms that have been released into the environment, including the impact on non-target organisms and ecological processes, indigenous biological resources, and the biological diversity of species used to agriculture. Commercial values based on research that identifies and evaluates. Amendment services by providing that exemption can only be granted after comments and proposals are considered by the minister. Amend clause 40, that inserts clause 81A by including the MEC to be notified when a person wants to engage in the discovery phase of bioprospecting involving any indigenous biological resources. Amendment clause 51 would substitute section 52(1) and 2 by providing for penalties for subsequent and continuous conviction. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. And then, that is that, page 10. Then we come in Popo. In Popo. I learned the Honorable Matanya is not here. They have been introduction, they have been purpose of the bill, they have been consideration of the bill. The committee met on that date, and the NCOP permanent delegate, Honorable Matanyani, the key difference for National Department of Environmental Affairs, committee, you know, whatever. The committee appreciates the amendment made by the piece of legislation on the various sections of the Environmental Act. However, advise that much work needs to be done in the area of environmental education, compliance, and enforcement, both at national and provincial government. Two, looking at the number of environmental pieces of legislation that the department introduced this year, the committee raised a concern that the department should have consolidated those environmental legislation into one. On section one, there should be consistency in the use of the word 5 million rand. On section 12B, there should be consistency in use of word provincial state of department. The recommended usage of which should follow the pattern in section 20 that refers to head of department responsible for environmental affairs and in the province. On section 29A, there should be in section of 47.3 or 47.3A. Section 36.4 proposed that the section required minister to consult with the committee before granting such exemption, considering the seriousness of the restrictions imposed, e.g. killing of protected species, even though provisions of promotion of Administrative Justice Act 2008 number 3 of 2000 makes consultations essential by making it clear in this section will have to prevent any irreparable decision. It is recommended that the section should make cross-reference to the section in the Act making consultation mandatory prior to taking the administrative decision. Lastly, it is recommended that the schedule should also include the Limpopo Environmental Management Act 2003, Act Number 7 of 2003. The recommendation is as follows. The committee, having gone through the bill, found that the bill's enactment into law will address many problems of environmental management. However, all concerns raised should be taken into consideration before the bill proceeds to the next stage. A mandate is conferred on the NCOC delegate to negotiate in favor of the deal. That is Limpopo. And then we move to Mpumalanga.
Chairperson, the report from the Office of the Secretary is quite comprehensive in regard to negotiations, deliberations, and public hearings, and then carries on to state that after the deliberation, the committee supports the principles underlying the bill, taking into account observations of the committee as contained in the attached report, which amongst others include the following: that A, in clause 1 and clause 29, there should be consistency in the bill with regard to the fines for offences committed under the Atmospheric Pollution Prevention Act of 1965 and the National Environment Management Air Quality Act of 2004. It is therefore proposed that both said acts be amended to indicate that fines for first offences are 5 million rand and 10 million rand per second and subsequent offences. B, in clause 19B, which seeks to amend section 31K of the Act 107 of 1998, the phrase and the like should be clarified in order to avoid any ambiguity in interpretation. C, editorial, clause 13, line 53, inserts the word or between 1 million and 2, not TWOTO. The committee hereby mandates the delegation representing the province of Mpumalanga in the National Council of Provinces to negotiate in favor of the board after taking the following proposals into consideration. And then there's a quite an elaborate schedule starting on page 3 of the report, which goes clause by clause. Clause 1, Atmospheric Pollution Act, it deals with the problem, the deep response, and the suggested amendments. In that order, I'm only going to read the suggested amendments to you, Chair. In this case, amendment to reflect that the penalty for the second or subsequent conviction to be a fine not exceeding 10 million rand and for imprisonment for a period not exceeding 10 years. Clause 2, the Environment Conservation Act, because the legislation will be repealed soon, no amendment is required. In clause 2, Environment Conservation Act, in regard to the concerns and the responses, the department is of the view that no additional amendment is required but does not have an objection against the amendment as suggested. And that is the suggestion in the first column. So the department should just look at that, Chair. Clause 2 of the Environment Conservation Act on the next page. The suggestion is that the provision is amended to read a fine not exceeding 500,000 and or imprisonment not exceeding 6 months. In clause 20 of the Environment Management Act, the committee agrees with the comments made and suggests that the amendment be omitted. And then the last point is that exemption clauses should make provision for review after a period of time. Those are the suggestions, and I refer the department to the schedule on pages 2, 3, 4, and 5. That is the negotiating mandate from the Mpumalanga, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable. That was Mpumalanga. The Northern Cape not submitted the negotiating mandate, as well as the Northwest province. They have not submitted. Then we call upon the West Capta Provincial Parliament to include.
Thank you, President. Should I have been called on upon an Afrikaans or respond in Afrikaans, if that is okay. But for the sake of Honorable Watson, I'm talking English. Chair, the Western Cape Committee has met. They held public hearings and they have met again this morning. And it says that on clause 35 on page 10 of the line 43, insert a new paragraph B, insertion of and after paragraph C.
Now we've got from the department, we have from Ms. Gallup from the department. The explanations was that because a new paragraph D is added, the and must be added after paragraph C in the original bill. So we've taken on that. That's the only amendment that the rest of the chair has. And as you could see, it's been done in the format that it's supposed to be done. And I wish that the other provinces could follow suit. Thank you, chair.
Point of order, chair. I don't believe that negotiating mandates should be written in legal terms. I disagree with Honourable Freddie Adams and your view. I think the way our provinces are doing it is the way they heard it, the way they want to see it. It's up to us and our legal advisors and the department to put it in the correct way.
Right. But why not putting it in the correct way?
Yeah, out of order to do
it. No, we're not capable. We are.
Okay, they say that then, but it's how it should be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Honorable. Who had it? Honorable Lentor.
Yeah, Chairperson, I got.
You know, when you look at the Mpumalanga one, you will really congratulate them. Look at 6-6. You know, the extensive consultation from your traditional leaders and so on, you know, NGOs and stuff.
Thank you.
Because there was something, I don't see whether they also did
No, we did. We did.
You know, we can't pass legislation above the heads of our people. Thank you, sir.
So we're doing it in terms of the mandating procedural bill. Mpumalanga.
Okay, we have agreed earlier that the department will go and refine the document and information before them. May we have a proposal and a second
but they're from the same province, sir.
Okay.
They're from the same province.
Okay. Members. Okay.
Mpumalanga doesn't know procedure.
We will be dealing with this next week,
Tuesday.
I do not know whether the previous Section 75, if they are ready, could they come also next week, Tuesday? So that we are left them to can come. Honorable Durand is here to inform them that next week, Tuesday, we sit in if they are ready, if the two departments have negotiated and have agreed, they can come in also on Tuesday. Then, we have the minutes before us. Otherwise, I would allow the department. You are allowed to leave. You. We have the minutes before us, honorable members. Honorable Watson.
Chair, the minutes may have been circulated electronically, but you know, we came out of the dust of the Eastern Cape into the dust of the legislation weekend. I need to have assurance that the items contained in the minutes, which are the amendments to D36 that we are debating this afternoon, if they are exactly contained in the A section, in the C section of the bill, and then captured subsequently in the D. If that's so, then we can approve them.
No problem.
If I have that guarantee, I do prefer.
You have it. Second?
We don't have 12 minutes based on what the Honorable Watson is saying. Because it's his responsibility to say after our meeting, therefore he is president. If you approve the minutes, you must just approve them. Because the minutes are not linked, I will approve them based on what he is saying.
The matter corrected, he is in and we are proposing the adoption of the minutes. Who is the second one? The second being one of Polifan. One of Gantor.
No, I'm not. Proctor.
I'm just taking one
of the morning. Just putting members and putting the minutes. It's a parliamentary way. Just say what he read, like meetings or the honorable what he would.
That's unparliamentary.
Well, according to that, the secretary here, he said he was doing it in the past like that, but then it was changed to. You know, to read like it is now. I don't know. Unless you propose otherwise.
Yeah, I'll propose that to be done like it's done in Hansard.
Secondly,
there must be a uniform way of referring to members of parliament.
Okay.
It can't be different from this committee to the other committee.
Or to the
Hansard.
Yeah.
Okay, agree.
If the Honorable Adam, let it remain like that.
No, Honorable Ventful is fine.
Until, yeah.
Okay.
Given by repeated.
The minutes are held. Okay, then. Unless this is something I'm forgetting, we're meeting next week, Tuesday.
Can I just, may I write something?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have been concerned about the 75, section 75 votes. And I went and had a good look at the Constitution. And it's a pity I didn't bring it with me now, because I'm in a hurry coming from the plane. But if you look at section 75, what that says is that when a bill is passed by the National Assembly, section 75, you must please listen to what I was saying. Then it comes to the NCLP. And the NCLP can then approve the bill as presented from the NA, or they can make amendments. If they make amendments, the bill must, if they don't make amendments, the bill may then be submitted to the President for his consent and promulgation. If the bill is amended by the NCLP, it has to go back to the NA, and I think it's in terms of section 75C. And if they can then consider the amendments we make as NCLP and either adopt the bill with the amendments we have or reject those amendments. Now, if I'm reading it correct, we have very little input in the whole system. Because we can spend weeks working on a 75 bill and make amendments, but if the NA don't agree, they can just reject. I don't see any mediation or any other substitution in that. And maybe I can get clarity on that one, because if it's such, then I think there's a serious omission of our legislative role as the second House of Parliament in terms of section 75. I don't know if anybody can give me an answer to that, but if not, I think we as a committee have a duty to know what we're doing.
I think you're correct, Honorable Watson. That's my understanding also. We may throw all the efforts into it and when it goes to the portfolio committee, they can just as well reject that. Well, I think we shall have prayed our part. If they reject that, we shall have prayed our part. For now, that is the thing. Honorable Renfrew.
Yeah, Chairperson, I hear what Mr. Watson is saying. To me, it depends on the nature of the fish. You see, some of these pieces of legislation might just be technical and stuff. Others might have a bearing to our provinces. Because the other point we have also been questioning is in taking of certain pieces of legislation. That's why in other instances you had a situation where even a bill is divided into two. You had that section classified as Section 76 so that it allows inputs from your provinces and so on. The other matter is that you have, because it's kind of given to say water is a national competence, but it has got a serious impact in terms of that. For example, your home affairs. If home affairs is not functioning correctly, you can't have the province deliver your issues of social rights and all those things. But then I mean you will have those different competencies. I think what we need to do is to say, in terms of the nature of this bill, how substantive it is and so on. Because the Constitution does not say you decide as an N2P because it's Section 75. There's a very same point you were raising earlier on. There is nothing which prohibits us to hold public hearings. But you will not be progressive if you will just duplicate and copy the legislation which has been done by the National Assembly. Because in the process, you then also allow this kind of, opportunity. People have made their arguments in the National Assembly. They couldn't win that battle. They want to have a second fight. But the Constitution does not prohibit them. And next time, they can challenge you in the Constitutional Court to say you didn't allow sufficient time for public hearing. So, but I mean, you'll have to check the circumstances. And then make a decision, because we are also free to make our own decision in this committee. But it should not lead to a situation where we just blindfold and hear ourselves anything because of Section 75. I think we'll also be wrong to do that.
You see, Chair, I didn't want us to solve the problem. I just want legal, we must know legally exactly what the decision is. Today we have a situation where the Department of Transport has come, we've rejected the way they're doing it, but they've come with a substantial point of view, which if I read the body language of our members, there's agreement with what they're saying, but the process is wrong. But now, the parliamentary officer of DEET tried to give an input, and he even lobbied me on the way out here, saying, that Department of Transport never make inputs to the National Assembly or to the Portfolio Committee. They are just waiting time now. Now, let's just take the scenario where that same officer or department convinces the Portfolio Committee, and we spend the next week and a half listening to the arguments, and we decide, yeah, they are right. And even consider the point made by the representative to take out that section. It still has to go back to the NA, and if they agree with the DEET's parliamentary officer's view or whoever's view, they just say, no, forget it, we reject the views of the NCLP. Now, to me, that is a flaw in our constitution. So I think we need to just, I'm just asking that maybe the powers in the NCLP have a look at this.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable, what is
My understanding is that if we have a proposed amendment, they should be reflected as proposed amendment on that. I'm raising that case because you can't pass a legislation as the NCOP where it doesn't reflect that was made on a legislation, even if it's Section 75. For example, this issue of this morning, I think, I don't want to say the Department of Transport was right, but if you look at the presentation by the Department of Environmental Affairs, the content of the bill has been changed primarily because of the proposed amendment by the National Assembly. When you look under Clause 4, the initial proposal of the amendment was based on the defense when they are doing testing on their aircraft. But the National Assembly proposed that any flight corridor, that's where the problem now comes up, of which it's clear that the Department of Transport was not part, because if you look at the presentation, it was the discussion between the Minister of Environmental Affairs and the Minister of Defense. So in other words, based on the proposed amendment by the Portfolio Committee, that's where the problem is, because it didn't put other flights at all at the beginning. But I think, as the NSOP, because I think we proactive to raise this concern, that at the end of the day, also the Department of Transport raised it. I think we have to keep on doing that. But I believe that whenever we debate this issue, we must come up with our own proposal when it comes to amendments at the NSOP, of which even if the portfolio committees don't agree with them, they will just take it out during their debate again. Thank you
very much. I think that's something that could be looked into. And the very many different item office, I thought, so that it could be looked into deeply. Honorable Ventura.
Yeah, sir, I was going to say you also had the back to link up with the two ministers of course using the appropriate channels to say we would like them sitting together to resolve the issues. So you can't have a situation where a PLO wants to speak with political authorities. Mm-hmm. It can never be. Because a piece of legislation should be policy driven by politicians. So you can't have a situation where now administrative staff, you're taking a certain political power, they've got no authority to exercise. It's wrong.
I'm taking advantage of this committee to have same membership with due respect. I didn't consult you. Tomorrow we're supposed to debate what is this bill? Railway safety. Honorable Tower got it very late. I wanted to check whether can we make a statement or do we want to debate? Just because once we hear we've been called by Honorable Suleiman, wanted to check are we debating or not. So I'm taking this advantage once we're still here, and then we've proposed that we must have a statement, but subject to the decision of this collective. I'm sorry about doing this.
Chair, that's not a very intricate piece of legislation. It is very clearly debated and handled. I would support the idea of a statement.
Okay. But then there should be somebody who is doing a statement. Are you taking it? Okay. You're having another statement today.
Yeah. It's Mr. Statement. Honorable statement.
All right. Thank you. Members, we are done our first meeting after the Eastern Cape and the registration weekend.
We're done with it. Thank you very much for
Two. Oh, what? Okay.